Welcome to this Touch podcast activity, which has been recorded for Touch Neurology. This podcast aims to bring you expert multidisciplinary team and patient perspectives on the importance of integrating practice to enhance the care of patients with multiple sclerosis or MS. This activity is funded by an independent medical education grant from the healthcare business of Merck KGaA, Darmstadt, Germany, and is jointly provided by USF Health and Touch IME. In this podcast, two neurologists specialising in MS care discuss the management of MS throughout the lifetime of patients and consider treatment switching strategies at key milestones, for example, the paediatric, childbearing and elderly years.
Hello, my name is Jaf Ziemsen. I'm a neurologist at University Clinic Karl Gustav Karus in Germany. Today, I'm very delighted to be joined by Professor Tobias Derfus, neurologist at University Hospital Basel in Switzerland. In this section, we will cover the topic managing MS in patients over their lifetime. And I think it's a very relevant topic because MS can occur already in childhood. And of course, in senescence, there are challenges in treating MS patients at that age. And that's why I think it's very important that we look at different examples of MS patients at different times in their lifetime. And Tobias, could you introduce a little bit, so are there general changes over the lifetime regarding MS? So what we should take first before going into the cases?
So, I mean, I agree there was a tremendous progress in MS treatment, but also like making diagnosis of MS and following up the patients. So I think this really changed a lot during the last 20 years. And meanwhile, we have really registered treatments also for pediatric MS. That's something quite new during the last years that clinical trials have been run in pediatric population. I think that is something special and really novel. And I think this we can touch on. I think that the MS changes with lifespan and is different in pediatric patients compared to older patients. In pediatric patients, we often see much more inflammatory activity, whereas then in older patients, we have, of course, other comorbidities that come in and we see more progressive disease course and less inflammation. So I think we have to adapt our treatments to these different scenarios, the young patients with much disease activity, inflammatory activity, and older patients with more comorbidities and maybe also an increased risk of certain side effects like infections and also cancer. So I think we have to look at a broad view on MS, young patients, middle-aged patients, also sometimes with pregnancy wish, and older patients, and we have to adapt our treatments to these different scenarios and also our treatment monitoring, of course.
Yeah, so probably if we start as an example with an 14-year-old patient presenting with RMS, so you have said that a lot of inflammation, usually a lot of MRI activity is there. So, but you mentioned already that we have a lot of treatment options already available. I think 5 or 6 years ago, it was much more difficult to provide approved treatment to this population. But if you have this child sitting in front of you, so what would be your strategy?
Yeah, so I remember a case of a 15-year-old boy. I think he was sent to me from the pediatric department, and he had a very aggressive MS, so a lot of relapses, a lot of MRI activity, and he was on interferon treatment at that time. And as you can imagine, it's quite often that pediatric patients have quite severe flu-like symptoms after interferon therapy or during interferon therapy. So and in addition, the patient had a lot of disease activity, and this is quite a common feature. So if you look at the registration trials, for example, for fingolimod, so the PARADIGMS trial that looked at pediatric patients treated with fingolimod compared to placebo, the rate of relapses is a lot higher compared to the adult population. So it's a very inflammatory population with a lot of MRI activity, relapse activity. And in fact, in those patients, anti-inflammatory treatments can really benefit a lot. So the reduction in relapses was really stronger compared to the adult population. So specifically in this case, I think that was even before the fingolimod study was really ended. We had a patient with high inflammatory activity, didn't tolerate interferon treatment. So we thought about we need a more efficacious treatment and something that really the patient is willing to take and doesn't have side effects. So we tested for JCV antibodies. They were fortunately negative, and we put the patient on natalizumab treatment. And that's a very effective treatment. It's so far not registered for pediatric MS, but really effective, and especially in patients that have a high inflammatory disease activity, you can really expect a high benefit from this treatment. And since then, the patient is really stable. I didn't have any new relapses, any new MRI activity. Of course, if you put patients on Tysabri, natalizumab, you always have to check the JCV antibody titer. It has to stay negative to keep the PML risk low. In this case, it was negative for so far. And I think other good possibilities would be, of course, fingolimod treatment, which is now registered. And I thought also teriflunomide, probably in many countries, is also meanwhile registered. So another oral therapy where young patients can really benefit.
So it's a completely different scenario than if you compare it with the scenario of a young lady who would like to get pregnant and who is diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. There we have to look at potential negative effect of the medication on the pregnancy, on the fetal outcomes. That's probably not so much the disease activity, but the side effect profile, Tobias.
Yeah. I mean, pregnancy is a very common topic in MS because we treat young women. I mean, MS is more prevalent in women and in during younger age. So we often see patients with a pregnancy wish. And as you said, we are always very concerned about the baby, about the outcome, and that we don't cause any harm to the unborn child. On the other hand, we have the woman with the disease, and we don't want that the disability accumulates during pregnancy, that there are relapses coming during pregnancy. I think probably all of our listeners probably know that pregnancy is protective somehow, so relapse rates go down during pregnancy. But nevertheless, if you have an active patient, there might be relapses still during pregnancy. And especially in two conditions, we had problems. So especially when we stopped fingolimod treatment or natalizumab treatment, because patients wanted to become pregnant or were already pregnant, there is quite a risk of a rebound disease activity, so that we see recurring disease activity after we stop these kind of treatments. So it's mainly the S1P receptor modulators and natalizumab where we see these recurrence of disease activity. So this you have to be aware of if patients are on this treatment. So off-label wise, if patients are really active, we treat them during pregnancy with natalizumab with an extended dose scheme. So every 6 weeks of natalizumab infusions. And another scenario is that we put patients on a B-cell depleting therapy. And then after the last infusion of ocrelizumab, for example, we let the patients wait for another 2 months till they start with conception. So this gives them several months so that the baby is not really exposed to high levels of this antibody. But of course, this is still all off-label. I know studies are running for B-cell depleting therapies that look at this topic. But still, there's a lot of research to be done to be really sure that these treatments are safe for pregnant women and their children.
Now, coming probably to the most challenging patient, that is the really old patient. For example, if you think about a 65-year-old patient with progressive MS, so there, I think we have a lot of challenges. We have not so much science available, study data available. Of course, we do know that from the meta-analysis that not so much efficacy is there in this age group. But we have what you have mentioned already: comorbidities. We have age-specific adverse events. Probably, if you could elucidate a little bit at the end of our conversation, what is the challenge of this old patient?
Yeah, I think you're right. That's probably the toughest case, the old patient with MS. Mainly, it's a progressive patient, so either secondary progressive or primary progressive. We only have registered treatment for one registered treatment for PPMS, for primary progressive MS. But in these studies, mainly patients above 65 were not included in the trials. And the patients that were included, there was a clear indication that younger patients benefited more than older patients. So as you said, I think the benefit-risk balance changes. We probably have more risks because of other comorbidities, because of an increased risk for infections in these patients. And on the other hand, we have a decreased efficacy of most of our treatments, I have to say. So I think you probably have to stratify patients and think who could really benefit. These are certainly patients that have still disease activity, so that still have relapses, MRI activity, maybe a stronger decline in their disability. But I think we still have to be aware that we expose them to risks and the benefits of these treatments are not so high. So I think this is still a topic that needs a lot of research and probably also new treatments that target different aspects of the disease, not the really lymphocyte compartment, but really the probably intrathecal compartment, microglia, astrocytes, and so on. So that's a topic of research. Of course, we treat these patients, but I would be hesitant to treat everyone and really look at the specific patient if he or she really benefits from this treatment.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you also.
Thank you for listening to this Touch podcast. You can access more content on multiple sclerosis on Touch Neurology at www.touchneurology.com. Don't forget, there are two other chapters in the series, so please listen in for further insights from the multidisciplinary team.